Welcome to Women Who Move Nations, a podcast by the Public Transport Association Australia, New Zealand.
Each episode, we interview a top female executive from the public transport sector in Australia, New Zealand, and around the world.
If you're interested in leadership, workplace gender equality, or building clean, green transport for the future, this is the podcast for you.
Hello, and thanks for joining me on this episode of Women Who Move Nations, the Public Transport Podcast. I'm your special guest host, Sally Stannard, Deputy Director General of Translink at the Queensland Department of Transport and Main Roads, and I'm also the Vice Chair of the PTA ANZ Board of Directors. I'm absolutely delighted to be joined today by our guest, Samantha Gain. Samantha is the General Manager of Metlink, the Transport Authority of Greater Wellington Regional Council. Samantha has had an impressive career as a leader, and I'm very excited to get into this podcast interview with her. Welcome, Samantha.
Thanks, Sally. I'm really delighted to be here.
Samantha, you're the General Manager of Metlink, the Public Transport Authority for Greater Wellington in New Zealand. Can you tell us about that role and how your career journey led you to this position?
Sure. So the GM Metlink role covers the operation of bus, rail and harbour ferry services in the Wellington region. And we also have a total mobility service, which provides public transport access to our customers with accessibility issues. And I have a fabulous senior leadership team of four people, and we kind of cover operations, service design and customer experience, assets and infrastructure, and strategic planning. We're part of the Greater Wellington Regional Council, so we're part of local government in New Zealand is how this is structured. And we're involved in, as well as delivering the public transport network in the Wellington region, there's lots of national initiatives that we get involved in. So we have a national ticketing system program, bus driver conditions, working groups. There's currently a review of the statutory framework for public transport delivery. And we have some regional cross-agency projects we're involved with, including one called Let's Get Wellington Moving, which I might talk about a bit later, and Riverlink, which is a flood protection project but has got some public transport aspects. As part of that is moving a rail, one of our railway stations. I guess really key part of my role as general manager is the strategic relationships with operators, territorial authorities, the rail network provider, and lots of the other players kind of across the public transport and broader transport system in New Zealand. And I really like that part of it. And of course, we're a local government organisation, so there's a political dimension to it as well. We have our councillors who are elected, and we have a transport committee, which is the political interface for our work. And we have interaction with central government as well. I guess as far as my career journey is concerned, I've got a legal background. So I started my career as lots of lawyers start off, working in law firm in various roles. And I guess my legal career while I was working in private practice covered, commercial property, planning, contracts and procurement, and local government work generally. And eventually kind of was working in a law firm doing quite a lot of work for the Regional Council and the Public Transport Department at the time. And while I was doing that, I also became involved with an organisation that used to be called Ingenium and then joined what you in Australia called IPWEA, but in New Zealand we call IPWEA. And I was that's an asset management organisation, and I was on the board of that in New Zealand for a number of years, and then was the president, New Zealand president for a couple of years. So that was really interesting experience from an infrastructure asset management point of view, which I really hadn't had exposure to that through my legal work, and really opened my eyes, I suppose, in some respects to that more engineering way of thinking and doing things. And I really enjoyed that experience. And that actually is probably a key part of my move from working in a law firm to stepping into working in local government and in public transport in particular, where I felt my sort of skills came together really nicely in this environment.
That is a lovely combination of skills, isn't it? Law, asset management, board level, and then into local government.
Yeah, and I think, part of that for me, it really did open my eyes, the involvement with IPWEA or IPWEA, really from the diversity point of view, actually, about being exposed to different ways of thinking. When you're working somewhere like a law firm or, in any particular sector, when you're working with people who have been trained the same way as you, and you're all doing similar types of things, while you have exposure to other ways of thinking through your clients, there's nothing quite like really immersing yourself in an environment with people who have been trained in a different way. And, you know, I was one female lawyer in amongst a whole lot of male, at the time, engineers. It was an eye-opening experience for me. And, you know, we all know about the competitive nature of lawyers and engineers. So it's some interesting conversations and things at that time, but all to a great end.
Samantha, I love that insight, particularly as a female engineer who is working with a couple of lawyers in my team. That legal training certainly gives a different background to the way that I think, and I think together we can do some great things. So thanks for sharing that with us. Diversity of thought and training makes such a difference to the teams we lead and participate in. Samantha, for our listeners outside New Zealand, can you explain how Metlink works with Waka Kotahi, New Zealand Transport Agency, and operators?
Yeah, sure. So as I mentioned before, Metlink is part of the Greater Wellington Regional Council. So we're a local government agency or organisation. And Waka Kotahi, New Zealand Transport Agency, is a central government agency. And its role is to provide funding through to public transport and transport more generally. And also it has a key role in providing guidance as to how local authorities need to apply the policy that sort of comes through from the Ministry of Transport. So the Ministry of Transport is the central government agency. They work to Waka Kotahi, and then we work to Waka Kotahi's money flows through to us, if you like. So we have a close relationship with Waka Kotahi. There's a degree of framework setting and things from Waka Kotahi that we need to follow, and we have some flexibility about how we interpret some of those requirements. And then we, as the public transport agency, which is what Metlink is and regional councils are in New Zealand, we contract the operators of the service. So in Wellington, we have a quite extensive bus network, we have a passenger rail network and a small harbour ferry operation, and we have a number of operators who operate those services for us.
Excellent. So that makes sense. And it's great to have that legal training at the head of an organisation that contracts with operators to get the best value for the state. Samantha, can I ask you about some of the planning? I know at the regional level, the 2021 Wellington Regional Land Transport Plan set out goals to increase active and public transport mode share by 40% and reduce carbon emissions by 35% by 2030. They're big goals. What are the key initiatives being implemented to achieve those goals? And have you spotted any challenges with achieving those?
They definitely are stretch targets, and particularly, you know, regarding public transport mode share increase, of course, we've been experiencing COVID, which has seen a drop off in patronage over the last few years. So we're a little behind the eight ball in that regard. But, you know, nevertheless, we have a central government, and also our council is very motivated by meeting climate related targets. So we're doing what we can in that regard. Key projects for us, we are really stepping into decarbonising our bus fleet. We already had some of that work underway, but are looking to probably speed that up. And then on the rail network, we are looking to almost double the frequency of our passenger rail timetable over the next sort of 5 to 8 years, while also modernising the rolling stock. We've got a, you know, significant project on at the moment, just looking to secure central government funding for some tri-mode trains for our kind of longer services, and that will assist with the sort of decarbonisation agenda. Other things, you know, there are dedicated bus priority lanes and possibly a mass rapid transit option through Wellington City as part of the Let's Get Wellington Moving program. So that's a joint project we are involved in with Wellington City Council and also Waka Kotahi. But all of these things, at the end of the day, come down to funding. And I think it's a challenge, certainly a challenge across the system, across New Zealand, around where you put the money to potentially get, you know, biggest bang for your buck around climate impact and carbon reduction, which of course public transport mode share is a real part of that. So I think we're going to need to continue to keep our eyes on the, you know, whether it's biggest bang for buck, and perhaps being a bit innovative in some of our solutions going forward to try and achieve those goals.
I think you're right to say we're all grappling with what are the most effective ways to spend the limited budget we've got, and we're all facing these big ambitions, which are great and where we should be focused, but there's a lot of investment required to do so. So I agree with you. How do we get the best out of that? Can I ask you a really quick question? What's a tri-mode train?
So diesel, electric and battery backup. If you want to know any more about that, we've got a detailed business case I could definitely share with you.
That sounds fascinating. I just think it's interesting to see where the different agencies are headed. Look, thanks for giving us the run through of all of those projects. You're certainly working across a range of different fronts to try and achieve that patronage gain to achieve the mode share target you're after. And we, like you, have suffered patronage drops, but you are also publishing fantastic public transport customer satisfaction, including 94% traveller satisfaction. What have you learned from that survey? Has it identified any particular areas that you're going to chase? Because that's a great result already.
Yes, thank you. So, yes, we run the survey every 6 months or so, and it's a requirement of Waka Kotahi that we do that. And we're really, really delighted about the 94% satisfaction. That's for travellers, you know, when they're on the trip and they're surveyed when they're on a trip. I think that the areas that people are less happy about are in relation to information that's provided. You can access about services, and that's something that we already actually had on our work program to improve. So we have a real-time information system and, you know, signs on the street and that kind of thing, which feed into an app and a website. But that customer information piece is something we're working on. And that we also have how often the service runs, a decline in satisfaction around that. It's quite interesting, actually, because at the moment, I think like everywhere, we're experiencing higher cancellations than usual on our bus network, which is due to the underlying bus driver shortage. And so, in fact, while we're really pleased with our customer satisfaction increased result, it was a bit difficult messaging that in the media because it was seemed a bit of a mixed message alongside a lot of cancellations and that kind of thing. So I guess we're really happy that people who are using public transport are really happy with it, but it would be good, obviously, to try and find a solution for the bus driver shortage. The other thing, actually, I should just mention, at the moment in New Zealand, we've got half-price public transport, which is government-funded. So we asked a specific question in this survey about what impact the half-price fares might have had on people's behaviour around using public transport. And it did show that there were, you know, a reasonable proportion of people who were either taking public transport more than they otherwise would have, or were, and a smaller proportion who had been motivated to start using public transport by the half price fares. So that was interesting.
If you're enjoying Women Who Move Nations, make sure you follow us on your favourite podcast platforms and rate the show to help more people find us.
Follow the Public Transport Association Australia New Zealand to learn more about public transport and to keep up to date with all our events and activities.
Our website is ptaanz.org. We're also on LinkedIn. Just search Public Transport Association Australia New Zealand.
And our Twitter handle is ptaanz_.
If you have any feedback or questions, please send us an email at info@ptaanz.org.
Samantha, let's go back to you. I know you love working with engineers. When you did join Greater Wellington Regional Council nearly 10 years ago, you have mostly held transport-related roles. What is it that you enjoy about that space apart from the fantastic engineers?
Well, in addition to the fantastic engineers, I suppose, it actually is that there's such a wide range of people involved in public transport, which just makes it always interesting because you kind of can't have groupthink because the group is generally a pretty diverse group that you're working with. So I really like that about it. And related to that, you know, sort of the complexity of the context is something that I just am deeply interested in. I really enjoy how it is commercial, yet it's public service. You need to navigate the political spheres, both from the local perspective and through to central government. You know, how the political aspects are translated into policy, but and also into delivery on the ground. And I guess, you know, I'm very personally motivated by the carbon reduction mode shift opportunities that it presents and the urban development aspects of public transport. So I just find it very, very interesting. I've worked in it and around it for a long time, and so I have a pretty good understanding of where quite a lot of the, I guess, the legal framework for it comes from. And yeah, I find it a really interesting, challenging, satisfying sector to work in because it draws together so much of what I've done and it continues to develop.
It is a changing landscape for us all the time, isn't it? And I think a lot of our listeners will agree that that personal motivation we get in this sector can be so rewarding and satisfying, even when the work is complex and it's political overlay and it gets pretty challenging. You know, coming to work to do the things that you're personally motivated for and about makes a big difference. In that sense, you know, the projects and initiatives can be also quite personally motivating. Is there one that you're really proud of that you'd like to talk to us about?
Yeah, interesting. Actually, I was thinking about this kind of question. And in fact, I've spent the last 3 or 4 years before I stepped into this Metlink role being the General Manager of Corporate Services at the Regional Council. And in fact, the project that I'm most proud of probably from that role was actually an office move. So, which is not really directly public transport related, but we basically were in disparate offices and entered into a contract to come to a new office, which is our office now is the old Farmers Building on Cuba Mall in Wellington. It's a heritage building which the heritage aspects have been retained, but it's all an open plan environment and it's a really, really great place to work. And I think I've really enjoyed my sponsorship of that program of work because it was a real change for the organization, quite a significant change, both to the location of where people were working and the working environment. We've moved to activity-based working and that kind of thing. And I suppose it's sort of a small example of how we need to approach some of our public transport changes. We're in Wellington at the moment, we're about to roll out electronic ticketing on the whole rail network, which, you know, brings to an end a 137-year-old system of paper-based tickets. But, you know, that program, I love doing that program, and it has given me great learnings for actually customer experience of change and the importance of making sure that those change elements are dealt with well, that you're really conscious about dealing with them. And it goes for, you know, anything that we get involved with.
Samantha, I love that. I think if you can move a disparate bunch of engineers into a heritage building and everyone starts enjoying activity-based working, there's no problem with changing from 137 years of ticketing, because if you can do that workplace relocation, you've clearly got change management talent. I think that's fascinating that you can draw the parallels too, because it's such a human industry that we work in. This is about people's lives, how they travel every day. Lovely to hear that focus from you. Can I ask you a bit about your leadership style then in that context? It sounds like you've been thinking about this for a long time. Did your style evolve or was it a conscious decision? And do you have any key practices, leadership practices that you can share with our listeners?
I think I have definitely evolved my leadership practice, and definitely, you know, over time it's something about which I've become more deliberate. I have held leadership roles, you know, since I was a teenager in various respects. So I suppose there's a degree of just being my natural self. But I think it has come to me over the last five years or so, certainly, that there are leadership practices about which you really need to be deliberate. My natural style is, you know, to be kind of collaborative and trusting and relationship driven. You know, people have described me as, you know, inspiring and energetic, which I feel very flattered by. And I really put a bit of effort into making sure I'm supportive of my people. It's important to me to be seen to be, you know, confident and calm and unruffled, but I'm always conscious of not being too calm and unruffled so that people don't think think I don't care about what's going on, or I don't feel concerned when there's something that isn't going right. So that's something that I'm conscious of needing to think about how I appear in those situations to other people. I think about leadership practices, it is, as I said before, you know, it's something to think about, and particularly about how people look at you in your leadership role and the impact that that can have on other people is something that you don't always think about. So I'm spending a bit more time doing that at the moment. And I suppose I have this thing about, you know, sometimes you're in a headspace which isn't helpful for being in a leadership role, and you need to do something about that because you've got to step into a meeting with politicians or, you know, a situation where you really need to be full on leadership. So I have found it really useful to have something that you do to get you into that mindset. And the thing for me used to be, I would always make sure I had my lipstick and I put my lipstick on. That was it. I was in the zone. It's quite interesting to me that with COVID, that of course, with all the mask wearing, that's kind of changed a bit. And so I've been thinking about, well, will I keep doing that or do I do something else now? But I think, you know, something to, whether it's a personal mantra or something that you do to get you in the mindset and to have the demeanor that you need to have for the particular situation that you're going to step into.
Totally get that. And I love hearing you talk about the balance between appearing confident and calm, but also letting people know that what matters to them matters to you. You know, for our people, that's so important. I always throw my jacket on. When I do that, I don't know, I stand up straighter or something. Mm. It is really interesting for us what it is that helps us to be on your game and to be in the right headspace to do it. You know, women, we need to swap these tips because I think for all of us, there are different things. And, you know, we often hear about imposter syndrome for women. So I had my own dose of it this morning, Samantha, when I read your bio and went, oh, a lawyer, she's been on boards. Oh, my goodness. So I think it's fair to say we probably all need to share our tips. So do you have any advice for women who are experiencing imposter syndrome? What are the tips you give for how to handle situations if you're doubting yourself or your confidence is low? I love the lipstick. I'm going to think of that one. But you got any others? Because we've got lots of young women, you know, who want to know that.
I mean, we just all need to remember all the time that whatever role we're in, we haven't got here by accident. We all need to remember that we've been appointed to whatever we're doing because we were the right person at the right time for doing whatever it is we're doing. And that, I think that is just something we need to think about all the time. I mean, it's not only for women, of course, anybody that's in, you know, in any role, that you need to have, you know, a degree of self-confidence or remind yourself that actually I am the right person to be in this position. I've got at least as good qualifications as, you know, anybody else, and everybody has doubts. So I think it is completely, you know, feel the fear and do it anyway. I also think, you know, having a mentor or support network that you can discuss your feelings with is really helpful. I've not really had formal mentors throughout my career, but I have, you know, generally had one or two people that I feel comfortable bouncing ideas off, or, you know, talking to about things which, you know, make you feel a bit vulnerable. And that hasn't always been women or people who are older or more experienced than me, but, you know, it's useful to have a range of people that you can feel really comfortable having those sorts of conversations with. And sometimes, you know, a formal mentor can be really good for that, and particularly because sometimes you actually, the distance that gives you, you know, if you're not, it's not a friend or, you know, someone that you see all the time, that can be really helpful. And the final thing I guess I'd say is the thing about playing to your strengths. Nobody's the same, and, you know, the reason that you stand out will be because of some particular strengths that you have, and, you know, you can have more impact by spending time playing to your strengths than you can building up something which isn't such a strength. So I guess part of that is sort of like celebrating your individuality to a degree and remembering that you're there because you deserve to be there. You're the right person.
I love that message, and I hope people really listen to that. You know, you're the right person at the right time. You are not here by accident. It's a lovely, reassuring phrase to have. And I think I love that book, Strength Finder. Build your own strengths. And then, you know what I like to add to that? Fill a team with people who have the strengths that you don't have because you're part of the team.
Yeah, completely.
So that's a great way to think about it, isn't it? Mm. Strengthen your own, and then all those people around you, they're there with other strengths. In that context, do you have a plan for your career, or have you seized opportunities that have come along the way?
I'd say that to date, I've really seized opportunities as they came along. Yeah, I probably I was going to say, as I'm getting towards the end of my career, which horrifies me to hear those words coming out of my mouth, actually, but I am a little more focused about, well, I've probably got, you know, less time ahead of me than I've had behind me in my career. I'm probably a little bit more focused about it. But I guess, you know, early in my career, you know, I was a lawyer. I was working in a law firm. I really felt that, you know, partnership in the law firm was kind of the only career opportunity that was available to me. But I kind of had an epiphany that I didn't really want to do that. So I needed to find something else. So I think that was a really defining moment for me. And I, you know, stepped back into local government. I'd done a bit of local government work before. And then in the local government environment, you know, there's a plethora of opportunities that you can be exposed to. So I think for me, the opportunity to step into local government and also the IPWA opportunity probably came together to really set me on the path that's got me, you know, where I am at the moment. And yeah, I guess into the future, you know, I have enjoyed the board roles that I've had, so I'll probably look to do a bit more of that. And yeah, but apart from that, I haven't got a big plan for the future as yet.
That sounds like a big plan to me. Board roles with an opportunity to give back, you know, what you have gained in all of that time. And thank you so much for sharing that concept that if you look ahead in what should be your career path, you know, in the law firm looking for the partnership, and it's not what you want, that you can change that. And I think you're a lovely example of that, you know, to be able to reflect, actually, that is not what I want. So I'm going to go and chase something else. So thanks for telling us about that. We are almost out of time for this interview. So thank you so much for giving us your time today. I do have one last question, though, and it's something that lots of people will be interested in hearing your perspective on, I think, and it's about the advice. I mean, your conversation today has actually been filled with loads of advice. So far, I've got like great lipstick, be really friendly to the engineers. But I'm thinking that you've probably got some other advice you want to give for women who are younger or early on in their careers.
So I think those are definitely the most important things, the two you've just mentioned. But no, seriously, I think, and it's probably been a bit of a theme about what I've been talking about, but do get involved in things that interest you or that might not be part of your core role, because you just don't know where those things that might lead or the opportunities that might come up as a, you know, as a result of that. And the IPWA is a really good example of that in my career to date. I think also don't be afraid to be visible. In fact, you know, I would say take opportunities that you have to be visible. It can be very helpful for people to see you and to see what you're interested in and where you spend your time. For some of those things, it doesn't matter if you're a learner at it. Just the fact that you're getting involved in it can make you noticeable. And you never know when some of those things that you might have done might present an opportunity to you. You know, it could be several years later where someone might say, oh, I met you at a conference or at a meeting and I heard you talk about this thing. It's really stayed with me. And are you now interested in doing X, Y, or Z? I just think that's really important. And related to that, I guess my other point is, you know, do reach out and make connections with other people who are doing what you think you might like to do. Doesn't matter if you haven't got a 5-year plan that, you know, might not include such a thing. But if you're interested in something, it's worth, you know, pursuing it in some way. And people who are doing at the moment what you think you might want to do are always interested in talking about what they're doing and usually are really keen to make themselves available, particularly to younger people and people who are earlier in their careers, to help with not even decision making necessarily, but to bounce some ideas around. So stand up, don't be afraid to be visible and make connections with people, probably my key things.
Samantha, that's great advice. And I totally agree with you. When people want to talk about the kind of work that we do, most of us get so excited about being able to swap notes on that. So thanks for sharing that advice. And I think it is a really great way to be visible and get connected. Samantha, it's been my absolute pleasure to speak to you today and delighted to hear about your career and all the things you've learned along the way. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your insights. It was an absolute pleasure.
Great. Thanks, Sally. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
That was Samantha Gain, the General Manager of Metlink Greater Wellington Regional Council. I'm your guest host, Sally Stannard, and you've been listening to Women Who Move Nations, the public transport podcast. I hope you'll join us again soon.
Thank you for listening to Women Who Move Nations, the public transport podcast.
This series is produced by Dylan Adler and Sophia Dickinson for the Public Transport Association Australia, New Zealand.
To find out more, please visit our website, ptaanz.org. Tune in for more soon.